What's good, everybody? You are listening to the Post Bougie Podcast for the weekend of Sunday, June 19th. This is GD from Brooklyn. I'm here with my play cousins and blog mates, Monica.
Hello.
Jamel.
Hello.
And Joel.
What's up?
And everybody seems to be sick today. I'm not sure why.
I'm not sick. I have a frog in my throat.
So first, we're going to talk about the Anthony Weiner story came to its inevitable conclusion today, when recording on Thursday, by the way, when Weiner decided to give up his House seat. The second thing we're going to talk about is the first GOP debate of, it's silly season already, but as a bunch of uncompelling, crazy people try to win the Republican nomination.
So last week, as you know, Congressman Anthony Weiner had a bit of explaining to do about pictures sent out from his Twitter account to a variety of young women. One in particular became public. It was a picture of his crotch. Over the next several days, we found out that Congressman Weiner had been actually sending multiple pictures of his crotch, some clothed, others not so much, to a variety of women on Twitter and Facebook, some solicited, some less so. And this sort of culminated in a press conference where Congressman Weiner tearfully apologized.
Tearfully? Since then, I didn't see that. He was crying? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, they're always a little bit tearful when they have these scandals. I don't think it's real.
He was tearful. Oh. I watched the entire thing.
Why? Why was he crying?
Because he just ruined his career.
I mean, it didn't sneak up on him, you know what I'm saying?
It sort of did. I mean, like, a reasonable person would say to themselves, if I'm sending pictures of my junk on the internet, eventually it's going to kind of catch up with me. But congressmen have that nice combination of, like, arrogance and narcissism. So it just never occurred to him that, like, taking pictures of his penis and sending it to people might become a thing for him. This was last week. Since then, more pictures have come out. More explicit than the previous ones. Kind of the details of these interactions have come out. And senior Democratic leaders, DNC Chair Debbie Wasserman Schultz, House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, to some extent Barack Obama, have been pushing Weiner to leave or resign his seat. And so today, I presume, I didn't actually watch any press conference today, but today I presume Weiner officially, he's going to leave the House. A lot of liberals have at least compared this to David Vitter and John Ensign, and sort of said, why was Weiner pushed out, but those two weren't. And I actually think there's a few good reasons for that. The first is that an individual member of the House, unless you're in the leadership or on a influential committee, individual members of the House are almost interchangeable.
Right.
As far as the House, this would be the House at least. And so it's just easier to push out a congressperson for that way.
Right.
There's also no real risk to Democratic leadership pushing Weiner out because they'll retain that seat.
Right. If he were like in a battleground district, even then, I mean, it still wouldn't matter, right? Because we're talking unless the House was like had a razor thin majority.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing too is that though Weiner was very media savvy and was able to build his career that way, he didn't have any strong ties or relationships with fellow congressmen.
So nobody was willing to go to bat for him.
Right. Exactly. No one was willing to go to bat for him at all.
People were in the beginning, but he lied to them, and he lied to everybody, and like the people who kind of went to bat for him in the beginning believed his lie and repeated it, and then they looked like fools. So he burned those bridges really fast.
Sort of a sad end for a guy who was clearly on the up and up.
But I don't know about that, really.
He was kind of a star, though. I mean, like,
he was an emerging Democratic star.
Yeah, I mean, in New York, he was like, you know, seen as like kind of a liberal firebrand, and you know, like he was always the person who was saying stuff that, you know, I mean, in New York, it's easier to say that in New York, right? Because I mean,
like, I was gonna say, like, that's the only place where it builds up his career. He was going to run for mayor there,
right? I mean, but that matters, though, right? I mean, you want a profile, like, this was a good place to start, you know? I mean, the stakes are
mayor of New York City isn't like, you know, it's a legit political position.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, it is a legit political position, but it hasn't been a stepping stone to something bigger for a long time.
But like, that's not what he's saying, though. He's not saying that it needs to be. I think that was kind of his end game, not that he wanted to.
Right. It doesn't need to be a stepping stone at all. Just like being mayor of New York City in and of itself makes you in the top tier of influential politicians in the country.
Yep, absolutely.
Although I don't know that Wiener would have won the mayoral race anyway.
But I mean, if he had a chance, that's gone now. Like, I mean,
is it really?
I mean, you know, New York is a weird place, right? I mean, Giuliani.
I mean, think about all the indiscretions and, like, you know, things that I mean, you know, moving his mistress into the mayor's mansion or something like that.
Yeah, that was. But I mean, the other thing is, like, we don't have like transcripts of that shit, and we don't have video of Giuliani's penis.
There are a couple key differences. One is that, like, you know, politicians having maybe dalliances that are clearly sort of like even and involve, you know, obviously consenting women and aren't intensely private is like different from a congressman who is having like really embarrassing electronic conversations with people. Like he just seems really lame, you know, in them. Like, but more importantly, like, you know, some of these were sort of like online relationships where it made sense that they were sexual in nature, that he, you know, he took them to a sexual place. A lot of them weren't, though. Like the picture of his cock that became public. Just gonna say it.
Keep it clinical.
Didn't become public accidentally.
That's also one of those moments where everyone's like, oh right, Monica's white.
Yeah, well,
do black people say cock? I don't think
so. Yeah, because it's a wild word. It's so outside of my wheelhouse. Go ahead.
I just like to say it every once in a while. It's like one of my favorite words. Okay, whatever. So, you know, he like accidentally sent it to a woman. He, you know, he sent it to her. He directed it to her attention on Twitter in a way that he meant to send it as a DM, you know, but he accidentally sent it as an @, you know, message. He was having like a political conversation with the, she had followed him because she admired him.
Right.
He struck up a conversation with him that was entirely political in nature. He sent her a picture of his penis, clothed, but still, and it sort of like comes out of nowhere. And it's like this woman. No idea why he sent this to me or whatever. So it's like it's really embarrassing, but also it's like, and you know, I'm sorry, like that is not an okay thing. Like that's a thing where it's like, here's this woman trying to engage with someone politically in this public space and she's still not safe from some penis flying in her face. Like that's like not okay.
Yeah,
like
no, you're right.
I'm not humorless and I don't, it's not like I'm a prude or whatever, but like,
come on, that disclaimer is not necessary. I think we get what you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't have to do the whole, oh, yeah, humorless, feminist, not,
that's what people have been saying. It's like, oh, nobody can laugh at a penis joke. And it's like, it's not a penis joke. Like, he just like decided to take it to a level that was clearly unwarranted.
I think there's one credible, like, circumstantial defense thing that I've heard, and that is that this person who received the picture on Wiener's Twitter follower list is directly adjacent to a porn star he was also direct messaging with.
Yes, uh-huh.
And so, like, I guess if you're, like, totally incompetent at Twitter, you could hit the wrong reply. But that seems sort of, I give that, like, 50% plausibility.
You would think that if you're doing something like that, like, I'm, like, very careful when I'm DMing people or whatever on Twitter. Like, but, like, if I had, like, a picture of my penis, like, that I was sending something, like, there would never be a time when I'd just be more careful and, like you know. Exercise as much caution as possible to make sure this person know?
Well, also, the only other reason I don't buy that is because he started this whole stupid thing with that stupid lie where he was like, somebody hacked my Twitter account. I don't know if that's my penis or not.
Oh,
yes. You know, like, so he started out with that. Like,
so many penises. I mean, it could be anything.
It could be anybody's penis.
Who knows whose penis was on my computer? you know, but, you know, and so it's like, if he hadn't started out with that, I'd be inclined to say, you know what, that porn thing, possible. But now I'm just like, not so sure. I think you were just sending your penis to people.
And it's like, and like you said, it's a kind of a fucked up thing to do to somebody, you know? Like, they're sending, you know, I mean, I guess, you know, she's like, hey, you know, I wonder what's going to happen with, you know, the debt ceiling. And he's like, here's my dick. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. She's like, I admire your political bravery. Here's something else for you to admire.
Yeah, like, that was the craziest part. It's like, when the trans kids came out, their little retorts were all stupid. Like, you know, it's like, they all were like, whatever the last person said, with dick at the end. Whatever the last thing that was said, but with dick. You know what I mean?
I know, that's the thing. It was like, I don't understand. I don't understand why he thought this was like a place that it was going.
Yeah, it's weird though. You would think, I guess I'm really naive about like how politicians ascend to power, but like you would, I mean, this isn't something that just popped up like in his.
I mean, it's sort of like, so it's my, so like there's two sides of the coin being a politician, right? Like to win office, you need to have a couple qualities. First is the narcissism to believe that you alone should represent hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. Yeah. There's a certain amount of arrogance involved that these people will vote for you, and a certain amount of just like boldness you need. And like those same qualities can also, it's like tragic in the classical sense. Like those same qualities can also be someone's downfall. Mm. And so like it's much the same way with Bill Clinton, right? Like Bill Clinton is a guy who's, you know, wickedly intelligent, very ambitious, kind of arrogant, kind of a narcissist, and extremely able to relate to people. And the flip side of that is sort of like an insatiable hunger to be approved of, which can lead to some really terrible places.
That, I guess so, but you know, if you strip all that down and you think about the people that, like, when you're
stripping, I would not. Doing this on purpose.
I mean, I wish I was that smart that I was like doing that.
It's really well done.
Damn, but I did that on purpose. I'm sorry. I meant to. But I mean, if you think about, like, I mean, again, I'm going back to the naive child in me that, like, if you go back to like middle school and high school, and you like, yeah, everybody had people in class that they sort of identified as like, that's the person that'll hold political office someday.
Yeah.
It was never the guy that like pulled his dick out in front of people, right? Like, no matter how smart he was, right? I mean, I guess I get what you're saying, Jamel, but I guess I'm just still sort of like, I don't know, like, I'm never shocked when these things happen. But I'm just wondering, how did you get this far in life without this, like, being your downfall at some point? Like, without this coming up in some sort of... You know, damn it. I mean, all puns intended. Let's just go ahead. I didn't step like it there, right?
That's the name of this episode, All Puns Intended.
Right.
I mean, I think maybe part of it, too, is that, like... you know, it's like the person in school who wouldn't have felt comfortable pulling out his penis, and then like,
wait, was that, isn't that everybody?
There are some people in school who
pulling out the penises. So I knew some kids who felt comfortable pulling out the penises.
Yeah, no, there's like one or two people in every class who's like, let's do the craziest thing, and that means showing my boobs or pulling out my cock. Like, this isn't happening?
I don't know. This is the first time I've ever been happy to go to a Philadelphia public school. That's never happened to me before.
Yeah,
right. Somehow I've been shielded from this horrible, dick-slinging adolescence that y'all had to endure. You know what I mean?
But I mean, there's a high school archetype that comes from this, like, supreme self-confidence and narcissism, and the kids who you think are going to be politicians don't have that in high school.
Yeah,
but maybe they get it when they get power.
So to Joel's point, though, like, it's not as if, like, Wiener had ascended so high that this would have come out if he was already doing like a, this digital perv thing. It might not have like it, the stakes are relatively low up until.
I don't know. I mean, like I'd imagine just by virtue of it being like a large urban center that New York City politics are pretty cutthroat.
Yeah, he was
then like
Calvin, right. Yeah,
congressional politics are certainly no beanbag.
It's New York City politics, and he was a Democrat. I mean, he's probably running fairly, like, reasonably unopposed, essentially unopposed, right? I mean, it's not like, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably just, like, token opposition, and they probably picked him, and, you know, he was a firebrand, and people liked him, and, you know, the seat was probably his for taking. Right? I mean, I actually don't know much about his district, so let me just shut up right now. I'm not sure where his, like, what.
Yeah.
It's New York's 9th district.
Yeah, no, I think, I'm pretty sure it's in Brooklyn, but I'm not.
I think you're right.
But I don't, also don't, but I don't know whether it's one of those districts that might, you know, there's some neighborhoods in Brooklyn that are relatively conservative, right? I mean, like, you know, so I don't know if it was one of those places, but I'm just saying, well, like, it doesn't, to Joel's point, it doesn't, this seems like the kind of, this seems like about the level at which one could ascend when, you know, the dick pics would start to, like, start to, you know what I'm saying? Or start to become an issue, you know what I'm saying? Because if you, you know.
Yeah, it's actually Queens. I think it's actually Queens. And it's, like, Far Rockaway. It's, like, yeah, it's, like, that part of, maybe it also includes parts of Brooklyn. It's, like, over there, like, Canarsie, and it's, like, the part of Jamaica Bay. It's, like, Jamaica, it goes over Jamaica Bay. So it's, like, Queens and Brooklyn down to the Rockaways.
So, but I think to Joel's point, I think that's, like, this is about the point where he would, like, have had a profile large enough for people to start, for him to have, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if he was a state senator, you know, like, maybe not really.
Well, I don't know, because when he ran for mayor in,
Five?
Was that long ago?
Yeah.
I think it was a long time ago. You know, that was a really hotly contested race, and I would maybe 05 was a little bit early for that. Most people weren't on Facebook in 05.
Yeah, no, exactly. This is all, the whole Facebook revolution and everybody tweeting everything is literally something that's happened in the last 4 or 5 years. So, like, he couldn't, maybe Anthony Weiner wanted to pull his dick out and show it to people, and he just didn't have the technology to do so.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it'd be really cumbersome to, like, take a, you know, a digital photo of your penis
and then email it.
And then, like, send it to someone. It'd be a very stylish penis if you're a Polaroid, but
maybe he did. That was still when people downloaded it to their Eudora file is too big.
Oh gosh.
Sorry.
So what are the political ramifications of this? Anybody?
Yeah,
I don't think there really are any.
Wait, for him?
What do you think for him though?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, we'll see. Maybe he'll come back from this. It's not, like, the worst thing in the world. I mean, like, all things considered, it's not. It's people have come back from worse, you know. So
it's weird because it's just outside of being really embarrassing, it is really fucking embarrassing. But outside of being really embarrassing, it doesn't seem like, and, you know, and Monica's point about it being,
it's really douchey and pretty misogynistic. But, like, a lot of people don't get punished for that stuff.
Right, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Like, how much of that stuff, I mean, in a better world than the one in which we live, I think there might be more ramifications. But
I was going to say, it's also kind of bad that his, like, his wife is pregnant. Like, that sort of, like, makes it seem more serious somehow. Like, they're about to have
stuff is genetic. Kid. Like, if it would be the desire to shoot pictures of their crotch would be passed on to the next generation.
No, I mean, not like, for some reason that lends it like it makes it like sadder for people somehow. I don't know. I don't really understand. As a side note, Jamel and I were walking back from dinner at Nicole's house yesterday, and we passed the CNN cameraman waiting outside the apartment building where he lives here.
Wow. What would have happened if he was just defiant about it, though? What if he was just like...
I mean, nothing. This is the thing. Nothing would happen.
I just kind of... I guess I'm sort of surprised that he bowed to pressure. I mean, I guess, obviously, if he was going to lose some of his chairmanships or whatever, then, you know, fine. But
he didn't have any, right? I mean, that was the whole thing, is that he didn't have it. Did he hold any big seats?
Nope.
Yeah, so that's the whole thing. It's like, there was nothing at stake outside of, you know, his reputation. Which, I mean, I guess...
I mean, to be fair, your reputation is no small thing.
Who knows how many penis pictures are out there? I mean, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it would be really... I was going to say really hard, but...
All puns intended.
It's happening so naturally.
I know. Right. Why is everything a euphemism for erections? I don't know. Sorry.
I don't know. I guess I just sort of... I didn't think the long game is always sort of like what I would have thought. Oh. Damn it. What is wrong?
It's happening.
I mean, so what is it like? Long come, you know, up.
basically every word. You can't say any word.
Yeah, basically. You're right. Let's just stay away from adjectives.
We don't need to stiffen his resolve.
Oh, man.
We just really made a mess of everything. That's not even really a pun. It's just funny.
He couldn't have the more perfect name.
Oh, my God.
But also, he totally worked it for all he could. I didn't mean to do that. No way. He was like, sorry I stiffed you guys at the press conference. Like, he was having a grand old time like a week ago. And I think that's why he's been punished, is because he's been an adolescent about everything.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah. You're probably right.
I mean, I wouldn't have expected anything else from him. I mean, not being an adolescent, but like being sort of defiant, you know, all the way down. I don't know. I'm really disappointed in this because I liked him. I really did. I mean, probably like a lot of other, you know, progressives or liberals or whatever. Like you see him, you're like, man, the dude swings back. Like, he's not afraid. Shit. I tell you what though, like, and I mean, sort of not off topic, but like, he has to be. I mean, I need to know the person that's ever worked for. Like, you know, you send the dick pic, and like the girl's like, oh wow, that's really impressive. Like,
more importantly, do you want to sleep with the person who gets aroused and you send them pictures of your crotch?
So let's move on to something a little bit less juvenile, I suppose. The first GOP debate. Well, this is the first one, right? There was another one, but they didn't have this whole array of.
Right there. Yeah, there's an early one in May or April that had everyone. No one worth listening to.
Yeah, absolutely. So this one had the entire panoply. It was you know, essentially a bunch of talking points, like a bunch of people arguing for American exceptionalism. A lot of people arguing. Going even further than George W. Bush and cutting taxes. And so I think the big moment that everyone paid attention to was Tim Pawlenty had been on one of the Sunday shows last week and had criticized Mitt Romney's healthcare plan, which is the albatross around Romney's neck right now. The Romney healthcare plan that he instituted in Massachusetts that was a major influence on the eventual Affordable Care Act that the Obama administration passed. And he called it Obamacare.
Well, the issue that was raised in a question from a reporter was, what are the similarities between the two? And I just cited President Obama's own words that he looked to Massachusetts as a blueprint or a guide when he designed Obamacare.
But you say you asked a question, which is fair enough, but you chose those words. And so one of my questions is, why would you choose those words, maybe in the comfort of a Sunday show studio? Your rival is standing right there. If it was Obamacare on Fox News Sunday, why is it not Obamacare standing here with the governor right there?
President Obama is the person who I quoted in saying he looked to Massachusetts for designing his program. He's the one who said it's a blueprint in that he merged the two programs. And so using the term Obamacare was a reflection of the president's comments that he designed Obamacare on the Massachusetts healthcare plan.
He got punked. Ooh, like, you know, you're talking loud before and I'm sitting right here and you can't say anything. It was one of those weird moments because the dude is his rival. There's no upside in him or not calling him out, but he chose not to call him out anyway. It was a weird moment.
I was going to say, it was very bizarre. Like, now is your time to really distinguish yourself. If you're trying to be the anti-Romney, then now is the time to say. I mean, the correct answer should have been, hell yeah, should Obamacare, what you gonna do about it?
Yeah, exactly. He was just shook or something, I don't know.
Exactly, he was shook. Like, and there was no time for halfway crooks in the Republican Party.
One of the things that was kind of hanging over the debate also was that neither Rick Perry, who's Joel's friend, from Texas, or John Huntsman, who John Huntsman is supposedly announcing later next week. I think he's going to announce officially. Yeah. But
I'll just add real quick that, like, I think the Rick Perry thing's more important than the John Huntsman thing. If Romney can't win a Republican primary, then John Huntsman certainly can't win a Republican primary, since he's just Romney except younger.
And not a Mormon, right? He's not a Mormon. Well, he is a Mormon.
He's a Mormon.
He's Mormon. You're right. He's Utah. You're right. I completely forgot.
Literally that. Mitt Romney, except younger, and he actually worked in the Obama administration.
But he was seen by some people, at least, as this, like he was a person who was like a kind of more moderate, not a culture warrior. And I guess Romney isn't. I mean, Romney's kind of trying to.
Romney's totally half-hearted about being a culture warrior.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
He's clearly bored by it. He's just like, let me crunch some numbers, bitches.
Absolutely, exactly. I mean, but he has to bow to the. To the idols of, you know, conservative electoral orthodoxy, right? So he kind of has to, you know, I'm against gay marriage, I'm against abortion, blah, 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 blah. He has to do that whole dance. But so why do you think Rick Perry matters? And Joel, Joel grew up in Texas and has strong opinions about Rick Perry.
I mean, it's not like, no matter who the Republican is, I mean, the Republican nominee is, they're going to deliver Texas, right? But,
right.
You know, Rick Perry sort of has this, I don't know how he's gotten this reputation. I mean, obviously he's a hardcore conservative, but he sort of has like he's not nearly as like unpolished as like Herman Cain is, and he's a little bit more of a firebrand than, you know, Mitt Romney and Tim Pawlenty. Like he has something that people, I think, the Republicans could probably get behind. You know that, you know, he's really aggressive in his criticism of Barack Obama. But the thing is, though, that's sort of weird to me is that, like, it's like nobody knows who Rick Perry is. Like, if you think that he's a legitimate candidate, and then all of a sudden it comes out that, oh, wait, you know, Texas actually had, like, you know, a $25 billion, you know, deficit in their budget this that just came up. Or, you know, he, you know, suggested that Texas might secede,
right,
at one point. Or that he, like, covered up, you know, evidence that Texas might have executed an innocent man. So, like, once you start bringing all those sorts of things up, like, it seems to me that his candidacy becomes a little bit more implausible. But I guess, I don't know. I mean, no. Well, I guess it's just sort of weird because, like, if he's, like, the Republican hope, like, this is a sports analogy, but, like, have you ever, like, watched a basketball tournament and on one side of the tournament it's, like, this really polished, really great team, and somehow on the other side of the bracket, like, there's this terrible team that somehow, like, advanced to the finals? And I'm just, like, I can't imagine that Barack Obama's, like, looking at these, like, debates, and he's like, oh, and Rick Perry's their great host? bring him on.
That's, I know. Right. Yeah. And he's, like, he's really great against ridiculous people. He has, like, this kind of, like, quiet, effortless ability to ridicule about him that I think is going to – he's playing into their hand – or they're playing into his hands.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I mean, can you imagine how bad the previous debate must have been if people thought Herman Cain won it?
Yeah, it was really bad.
So here's the thing about Rick Perry. Like, I agree that Rick Perry would make a terrible president and would probably lose an election to Barack Obama. But as far as, like, the Republican primary is concerned, Rick Perry has sort of, like, the, you know, he sort of hits the sweet spot.
He's a good old boy.
He's you know, a more evil. This is a third term as governor now. He's a three-term governor of one of the largest states in the country. He has a strong network. He has strong ties in the old Bush network. And although Tea Partiers in Texas aren't a huge fan of Rick Perry, Rick Perry could plausibly seem like a Tea Party standard bearer. He is an excellent fundraiser. He already has ties and the groundwork set up for in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, Florida, World in a primary, and he can raise the money to really compete seriously in the Super Tuesday primaries. He is popular among conservative elites. And, you know, Republicans like their nominees to swing their dicks around as much as possible.
So we know this in the wrong pot.
Wait, are we back to dicks again?
No, briefly. And Rick Perry, if Rick Perry can do anything, it's he can swing his dick around. I was at a breakfast.
Can he?
I was at a political breakfast on Wednesday, and I was just watching Morning Joe was on one of the TVs, was just watching that, and they were clipping from a Rick Perry speech. And even although he was completely incoherent, he was loud. He was like, the Obama administration is going to bring us into tyranny. He's sort of what Republicans want out of their nominees right now. So I think, like, you know, for a while people are hoping for Mitch Daniels or Haley Barbour or Chris Christie. I think Rick Perry has the advantage of both being able to unify some of the disparate factions in the GOP Anne can jump in at any time over the next 2 months and like be able to run a good campaign from there.
Do you think that's what he's doing? Do you think he's like trying to see how this like early bullshit game plays out a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what he's doing. I think if this early bullshit game gets a positive response, then Rick Perry's in the race. There's like people have been talking about Paul Ryan jumping into the race.
Oh, that would be such a horrible idea.
He's beginning to. He gave a foreign policy address last week, and like foreign policy addresses, if you're not like on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Or a presidential candidate, you're probably not giving foreign policy speeches.
That's kind of out of the
right. It's a little weird. It's a weird thing for the budget chairman in the House to be doing. I personally would love Paul Ryan to run because it would just be hilarious to watch him get humiliated in the general election.
Do you think he'd get that far? I mean, do you think he'd win the
Oh, I don't even think he'd win the nomination. No.
I think those motherfuckers love Paul Ryan.
But I mean...
Not the primary voters, though.
Yeah, the primary voters love Paul Ryan.
No, I don't think they do, really, because he's not an evangelical, so he doesn't get those... He doesn't get that enthusiasm from that base. But also, like, actually, the people who vote in primaries are older.
Right.
And they don't like the cuts.
Yeah, every time... I mean, like, in the aggregate, I think that's... And, you know, seniors don't like the cuts, but... Every time I've heard Paul Ryan like say, I mean, every time I've heard anyone, not even Paul Ryan, anyone say, "I'm going to pass the Ryan plan," to Republican audience, they go nuts. They go nuts for the Ryan plan.
But
I think that's different when there's a flesh and blood person standing there who you can say, "This is what he's going to do." They're not attacking him now because they don't get any benefit.
And the other thing is that, like, you know, Tim Pawlenty's budget assumes the Ryan plan, and if Tim Pawlenty's budget becomes the baseline for the Republican field, and like essentially everyone's going to be proposing a budget that contains some variation on the Ryan plan. Like, I think Paul Ryan could, if he were to run, could make a good shot for the nomination. And then he would probably lose in the general election.
Yeah, I mean, isn't it the problem for all of them?
Well, but also the Ryan plan right now is the Republican budget. It's like, so, but it's like if he's running, then he is like, they call it the Ryan plan because, like, they have an advantage now of trying to, like, build they see as, like, contrast it to the Democrats' spending plan.
Right, but if he were like, in the race, then they would have incentive to pillory it a little bit, right? I mean,
yeah, they would attack him, and they would attack the things that actually people don't like about it.
Yeah,
it would change the nature of it. Like their budgets assume it now because it's the Republican spending plan in Congress.
Right. That's a great point, actually. But to what Jamel was just saying was that Ryan would get to the nomination, and then it would get promptly throttled in the general.
You think? Pretty much, I mean, whoever gets the nomination is going to get 40% of the vote, right? At least.
Oh, yeah, yeah. If Ryan got the nomination, he would get 40% of the vote.
And that's at least. But then you've got to deal with apathy, too. You got to deal with the apathy, you know, from the people that have supported Obama in 08. Like, you got to figure there might be some drop-off there. And then you get to think about, like, the people that, like, actually hate him, like, that will come out. Like, I'm just not so convinced that it's going to be a walk no matter who it is. You know what I mean?
I don't think it'll be a walk.
I think Paul Ryan's Medicare plan is just so unpopular among the country as a whole that I think if Paul Ryan were the nominee, he'd essentially be the Barry Goldwater of 2011. Like, a true believer whose beliefs are so unpalatable to most of the country that, like, it wouldn't look like it on the approach, but once you actually got there, he'd be dead on arrival.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm actually more optimistic than most about Barack Obama's reelection chances. For a long time, I was always on the unemployment is what counts thing, and unemployment's important, but what I feel like has happened is that, like, other people have had this, like, mild exposure to political science, and so now they're just like, unemployment's everything, when it really isn't. Unemployment is sort of like part of like a bundle of factors that really play a part in determining presidential elections. If you sort of plot unemployment numbers and like the share of the two-party vote on a scatter plot, there you can't draw regression. There isn't any direct correlation between the two, between being an incumbent with high unemployment and losing a presidential election. Of course, to be fair, there could be a relationship. We just don't have enough. The sample size isn't large enough to guess it out. But as it stands, we can't tell if there's a relationship or not.
Can we go back to unemployment? Sort of a good enough unemployment and the trajectory it's on is sort of like a fair proxy for how people feel like the economy's doing too, and if they feel like the economy's doing badly and getting worse.
So there are a couple things. There are a couple things that together make a really fair proxy. There's unemployment in its direction. There's GDP growth in its direction, and then there's per capita disposable income in its direction. So actually, per capita disposable income is one of the most accurate ways of gauging the outcome of a presidential election.
Yeah, and which is why Obama wants to extend the tax breaks that we all
right.
are on. Right.
Right. Yeah. Right now, it's not great, but it's not bad either. And like, you know, I don't the effect of a candidate in a presidential election isn't super great, but it isn't negligible either. And I really think that Barack Obama is just a tremendously better candidate than anyone the Republicans offer. I agree that of the candidates, Romney is the strongest. I think if he were the nominee, I think it'd be anything but. Much in the same way that liberals were just desperate to get rid of Bush in 2004, so they like Kerry was okay. Right. Romney would play that part. I just think that the way I look at it is this: like you have to remember that a presidential election isn't really the country voting on the president. It's like each 50 individual states voting on the president. So it's like. The Obama map, the states Obama won in 2008 that gave him the presidency were Florida, Ohio, Indiana, Virginia, North Carolina, Colorado, Nevada. So that's Kerry's performance in those states plus like 4 or 5 percentage points. Barack right. Obama can actually lose Florida and Ohio and still win the election if he maintains a majority in like the other 5 states.
No,
Obama only has to marginally improve on Kerry's performance to win an election. And given the fact that his approval ratings always out, Barack Obama remains the most popular politician in the United States.
Yeah, and what helps him in Florida and Ohio is that like they have 2 Republican governors that are like, you know, as popular as like Scabies, right? Like they're, you know, Rick Scott.
Scabies.
Yeah, I mean, Rick Scott and Kasich in Ohio, I mean, they are Barack Obama's, like, best hopes for winning those states because they're, like, ridiculously unpopular.
There isn't actually, like, any relationship between, like, gubernatorial popularity and presidential elections. I think insofar that Scott or Kasich would matter is that they would just mobilize Democrats further. The average voter may not like really vote based on how they feel about the governor, but Democrats would be able to mobilize other Democrats based on how much right. they, how much Rick Scott is a terrible Lex Luthor analog.
Jamel's been waiting to make the Rick Scott Lex Luthor metaphor for a few days.
I can't believe he's I moved from there right as that happened, and I still can't believe he's in charge of a state. It's unbelievable. Like it's incredible. Even as it happened, you're like, oh my god, like they're going to elect a crazy person. Like they're really going to do it, and it happened.
Yeah, and he's doing so poorly, and he like is so not approved of, and like he just keeps walking around like, yeah, I'm just doing the booter's bidding, you know,
right,
like,
right.
It's kind of crazy, yeah, actually like the Prospect has in the July August issue, the American Prospect has a really good profile of him written by somebody I think Joel knows.
Is it John Frank?
Yep,
we used to sit in the same office together and hung out together. Yeah, good for him, we'll read it. Yeah, he's a good guy, good reporter.
It's on our website now.
Excellent. Yeah, get at it, man. And congrats, John. To this point, I guess this is what we should know about the GOP debate from the other night. We spent like the last 15 minutes talking about people who weren't on the panel, right? I mean, is that...
Yeah, that's pretty...
long and short.
That's pretty telling, right? I mean, so there are a bunch of people on that panel. I mean, this is true all the time, right? I mean, like, Al Sharpton got the biggest applause lines, you know, in 2006 or 2004, right? And like, you know, he didn't have a shot in hell of winning the nomination. So it's like, you know, this is kind of how it goes in the early going. It's like the people who are going to get the most, who are going to be the most brash, are the people who have like nothing to lose, right? So like, Michelle Bachmann, who starred for some reason. Like, people were taking her more seriously now because, and this is the thing, is like, she'd been caricatured before, right? She's the crazy lady with the big eyes who was always who like staring at the screen and ain't blinking, and like, yo, like, yo, she's this lady is bananas, right? But then she gets on the stage and she's just not as fucking crazy as she seems all the rest of the time.
And so, I think she's sensible. I just think, so I'm working right now on a story just sort of like outlining the people on her political team, mm-hmm. and sort of like, I think it says something that the guy running her campaign is sort of like a very well-respected, long-time Republican operative, in that the woman running her online fundraising, you know, worked on both McCain campaigns and the Bush campaign, sort of like a really high-profile Republican fundraiser. Like, she's attracting people who are totally legitimate within the party. I mean, I think it says something that Michelle Bachmann herself raised $13 million for a 2010 re-election campaign, which made her the... next to John Boehner, the top fundraiser in the House.
She How has did more she do that? Is it because she had a bigger national profile than a lot of people?
I mean, like, of her $13 million, 96% came from individuals, and of that, 55% came from small donations.
So wait, I don't understand. How did Bachmann get all the small donors to donate to her campaign?
No clue. People, they love her.
What? Oh, whoa, okay. Well, do we know if they were donors from out of state, or like...
Most, like, a large majority of them are out of state, like, you know, from through her, yeah, they're out of state donations, but I think it just shows sort of her really strong grassroots appeal to other Republicans.
So, do you give her a shot in hell of...
I don't know, I give her a strong shot at winning Iowa. I think if she can keep the money up, I think give her a strong shot at competing in South Carolina and Florida. It's sort of, I'm not sure how, if it goes any further than that. Because I mean, this is sort of me, I just don't know. Like, I don't know what the preferences of conservative elites. I assume that their first preference is to win. And so, Michelle Bachmann's so obviously not able to win a general election that I think she'll get far, and then people will, like, wake up and be like, well, elites will wake up and say, we got to put a stop to this.
Yeah, she's Howard.
Right.
Well, she's Mike Huckabee.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So can we talk about the black guy real quick? I mean, Herman Cain essentially is, you know, you go to a barbershop and there's always that one chair that a white citizen, like, that dude, he's going to fuck your hair up. That's Herman Cain. Like, that's who he reminds me of. I don't know why, he just reminds me of that dude. Like, I ain't sitting in that chair. No, I'm not sitting in that chair.
It'd be really interesting to know if, like, you know, how many Muslims, like, worked for Godfather Pizza. Like, I mean,
I know, right?
Like, wow. Like, he was in charge of a, you know, a company and, like, hiring people and, like, you know, abiding by EEOC regulations and things like that, and, like, I mean, he's just like, well, they should have to take, like, a loyalty oath.
Absolutely.
You know? Basically.
It's crazy because I can't, like, not only can I not imagine Herman Cain, like, running the United States of America, I can't imagine him running a corporate meeting. You know what I'm saying? No, I'm saying it's like, boy, let me tell you something. Like, it's all kind of... The other thing that I find fascinating about just Herman Cain's aside is that his whole shtick is kind of talking about race, right? I mean, that's like one of the... He didn't do it in the debate so much the other day, but like...
Well, you said like race is like a... You know, race would be out of the door or something like that, off the table if he wins the nomination.
Right, absolutely. Like that's a big part of the way he's trying to pitch himself. Is like, I'm a black guy and...
People only voted for Barack Obama because he was black.
Yeah, clearly. But there are people who think that, but I mean, could Herman Cain... Could he even finish in the top three in any of the early... primaries? I mean, I don't understand. Like, what? This is just a...
It's a vanity thing. Hey, I've said this before. If I had lots of money, I would run vanity campaigns all the time.
The thing is, though, for all those people that think, like, black people are, like, monolithic, like, all you need to know is, like, Herman Cain, like, I know a lot of Herman Cains.
Yeah,
me too. Like, Herman Cain is not an anomaly, just for the record.
He's my uncle.
Yeah, right. He's one of my uncles. Right.
Yeah, he is. We should probably move on to shout-outs now. Monica, do you want to shout something out?
I'm going to shout something down. I've been a Top Chef fan for a long time now, since it started, and Top Chef has spun off to have like a dessert show called Top Chef Just Desserts with pastry chefs, and it has like a master's show. So like Top Chef is a Bravo reality show with like, you know, young-ish chefs who are trying to like make their own way in the business. And then they had one of the spinoffs was Top Chef Masters, which is like people who are already pretty established and they compete and the money that they win is donated to charity. So there have been, let me think about how many winners. There have been probably a dozen now when you combine all the shows. Only one ever has been a woman in any of those iterations. And, you know, at some point when you're talking about food, it's always really subjective, right? It's like, oh, this food was too simple. This food was too fancy. Like, there's a, like, it doesn't, it's hard to say that this, like, one dish that you tasted is the best dish unless everybody's making the same exact thing, you know? So, obviously, there's like a male bias in professional cooking, and the women usually only win when the judges don't know. They win in the beginning stages. They win when the stakes are lower than winner, you know, when like lower than the finale, and they often win when the judges don't know who cooked what. The Top Chef Masters, the third season of that show ended yesterday. And there were, the final four were three women and a man. And so two women and a man made it to the finale. And one of them was a woman who had won really consistently throughout the whole show. And the man won still. Even though, like, one of the women had cooked, the woman who always won throughout the show cooked, like, the single best dish of the whole finale. Everybody said it. Like, I'm just done. I'm done with the show. It's like, it's just like, it's fundamentally sexist. Like, it, you can't say that there's not, like, there's, you can't say that it's not biased after a certain point. Like, the last, just the basic Top Chef show was just a, just ended it last month or the month before. And it was an all-star show with, like, you know, people who had competed before but lost. And the final five contestants, three of them were women, and they were the first three to go. It just, it can't be any objective measure. So right. I'm done.
Well, I guess it's not good for me to brag that, you know, when I go on my Saturday runs, Richard Blaze, I see him pretty much all the time on all my,
yeah, runs. He's the worst because he's the only one who ever lost to a woman in the fourth season. And, he talks about it all the time. He's like, well, that was my season to lose. And I choked in the finale. It's like her win couldn't possibly be legitimate, you know?
Yeah. And his burger place is like, you know, 3 minutes from where we live. And it's pretty dope. Whenever anybody comes in town, I try to take them over there. So,
well, thanks for supporting sexism, Joel.
Yeah, that's right. Yo, man. I'm not going to get between me and his milkshakes. I'm sorry. the bargain I've cut there to do that, but I don't know. But yeah, you're right.
Anyway, shout out.
Do you want to shout something out?
Sure. So I, because I'm a terrible nerd, I spent $100 and got an Apple developer's license. And so I've been using, the next version of macOS on my Mac as like a separate partition just to play with it. And it's really fantastic and I can't wait till everyone can use it because there are a lot of like all the really annoying things about macOS they fixed. And they've added lots of like nifty features like full screen apps. Auto-saving, there's a neat thing where it auto-saves your document constantly. So if you are writing and you're like, man, there's something I wrote, you know, like 2 hours ago, and I want to get that back because it was a good thought, you can go into this mode that lets you see each iteration of it being saved. Until you find what you're looking for. And then you can copy it and bring it back to the iteration you're working on.
That's what's up. I'm surprised I was loaded up before.
Yeah, so it's really great. It's really great. And then I haven't yet done this, but I have a beta of the new iPhone operating system and iPad operating system that I'm going to put on my iPad, non-essential, and play around with it. So just me paying to be nerdy is what my shout out is.
What is it? Pierre? What? What is
Pierre? Wasn't it Pierre Bernard's?
God, I hate you.
Bottom line, America. That was actually more Monica this week. Like, bottom line, America. I would never watch Top Chef. Although, you know, that's a legitimate criticism. You should write a post about that. Anyway, you should write another post.
I know I meant to, but I've, you know, been busy.
Okay. Joel, you want to shout anything out?
Yeah, you know me. I do too. Right. I want to make it quick. One is this book that I recently started reading, and it's called The State of Jones. It's by Sally Jenkins and John Stauffer, and it's about this family, really. They're from Jones County, Mississippi, and it's like a small farming family that, like, they made a local legend of themselves about, like, leading a civil war against the Confederacy. And they're from, like, Jones County, Mississippi. That's why it's called the State of Jones. And it's really, really interesting. Like, I've not been able to keep it, like, in no way am I able to keep up with Ta-Nehisi's, Civil War knowledge. So, like, I can't even hope to live up to that. But, like, I saw this book when Borders was going out of town down the street here. And it's really, really interesting. So it's definitely something I'd recommend. The State of Jones, yeah. And the other is, man, now that basketball season's over and I don't have anything else to care about until college football starts, I guess, ESPN is showing, like, all these documentaries on the weekends. And one of them that I kind of halfway caught, it's called Black Magic. And it's about the integration of basketball in America. And it's, like, nuts. Like, I mean, you see, you know, it charts the history of the game from Clarence Big House Gaines, who's a famous college coach in North Carolina. You see John Chaney, wow, who used to play for the Globetrotters.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Fucking blew my mind.
I did not know that. Yeah. For those of y'all who don't know, John Chaney is this legendary coach for Temple University in Philadelphia. He's, like, legendarily, like, irascible. But he's this huge, larger-than-life figure. I did not know he played for the Globetrotters. It just blew my fucking mind just now.
Yeah, right. I'm just saying, it's nuts to, like, see him, like, as a, like, a handsome young man and, like, balling. And I mean, it's such a good story. It tells so many good stories about, you know, guys that, you know, didn't get the opportunity to play in the NBA. And one story real quick that I tell is a coach named John McClendon. And it used to be that the NCAA and the NIT, they wouldn't let black colleges play in the tournament. Wow. But the NAIA would allow them in. But the way that they did it, they said all the black colleges would have to play against each other, and then they'd have to get into the tournament in the NIA. That one team would get to play. Well, John McClendon's Tennessee A&I team, which is Tennessee State now, won the NAIA tournament 3 years in a row under that setup. And it's just incredible. Like, man, sometimes you just kind of forget, like, what people have to do to, like, for people to enjoy or hate LeBron, like, how that story got started, like, in the 40s, 50s, is just incredible. So I definitely recommend that as a shout out.
That's a really good shout out, Joel. I need to check out both of those things out. I don't have anything to shout out, actually.
Do you want to tell anybody anything? Do you want
to? Do you have any announcements?
Okay.
Is it time? I don't want you to get in trouble if it's not time.
Right. No, I think we're good. So without telling the whole story again, because it's a weird story, I am going to be an editor at the Huffington Post in the next, starting at the end of this month, which was one of the most surreal moments of my life was sitting next to Ariana Huffington, and, you know, she talks like Zsa Zsa Gabor, being interviewed, like, for this job, and she's like, you know, would you still do your blog? And I'm like,
don't make fun of her accent.
That's a fantastic point, because she's on the list now. And I was like, ideally, and she was like, so how about this? Why don't you bring it over to Huffington Post? And you can keep it, and if you ever leave, you can take it with you. Last week was one of the weirdest weeks in my entire life, but one of the most amazing things that ever happened to me, the possibility of Post Wishing may migrate onto this big platform, and that all of us will get a chance to, like, have our voices heard in a much larger platform, is something I'm immensely proud of. And, you know, without being overly sentimental here, like, I'm reaping the benefits of a lot of people's work here. And so I want to thank all three of you guys for being my blogmates and for being my friends. You know, you guys have held me down, and I'm proud to know all y'all. And
thank you.
You should.
I'm very proud of you, man. I'm very excited
to thank everybody and all the Post Bougie listeners. You should just tweet a picture of your cock.
Yes.
We should all tweet pictures of our cocks and vaginas.
Absolutely.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely. And now we get fired.
Like, yes, genitals.
So all this is in the inchoate stages. We don't know what's going to happen with Post-Bougie exactly, what it's going to look like once if this happens, and it looks like it's going to happen. I didn't plan Post-Bougie to become this thing, but I'm glad it became this thing, and I'm glad it became this thing with y'all. So let's get it. On behalf of Jamel, Monica, and Joel, this is GD. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Be easy.
Our theme music is 8 by Aeon. You can catch us at postbougie.com.